The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
The Red Sox comeback falls short, going tit for tat with the Rays until eventually losing it in the 11th inning by a score of 10-8. The Red Sox unfortunately fall to 32-36 on the season. I'm Nick the Voice, joined by Jason Kelly and Chris Felico, and we are the Bastards of Boston. And if you want more, you can always go to bastardsofbostonbaseball.com for great written articles posted just about every day. It's becoming very active over there, so make sure to go check it out. It's funny, I actually just posted an article that I was working on throughout the game, just sort of wrapping up Roman Anthony's debut. Of course, that was the big story of the day. And I really played myself because I kept going forth and I was very presumptive. I was like, oh, well, this is his fourth at bat. So I wrote down in his fourth and final at bat. And then I said, oh, never mind. He's coming up a fifth time. Let me change that. In his fifth and final at bat. Oh, never mind. He's going to go out for a sixth time. Oh, no. Actually, he's going to get pinch hit for, of course. What did you guys think of Anthony overall? What was your impression? Because I think that's the big story of the game today, regardless of the outcome.
Go ahead, Jay.
So I will say, I mean, he hit the ball hard a couple of times, which was, you know, obviously encouraging to see. That's what he was doing down in Worcester, is that, you know, his exit velocity was through the roof, you know, most of the time. So that was good to see that, you know, he wasn't up there flailing about. He didn't look uncomfortable at the plate. He maybe looked a little bit uncomfortable in right field, which is understandable. He hasn't played right field. He's been playing center and left in Worcester, and Fenway Park right field is one of the most difficult to do. So I kind of didn't love that. I understand why Cora did it. Rafael is so elite in center. You don't want to take him out of there. Duran hasn't played right either, so you don't want to put that on him. But putting it on the 21-year-old seems a little bit much. Yeah, in terms of, you know, his at-bats, like, he looked comfortable. I know he didn't really produce anything, but he was still making good contact. He's, you know, again, the crack of the bat was there. Drew a walk later on, so that was good to see. So overall, yeah, it was an 0-for-4, but I think that, you know, I think he still looks like he belongs. So it was an encouraging start for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's tough because anytime you're coming up and you're the quote-unquote savior at this point of a team, it's very hard to live up to that hype and fit that bill. You know, I was trying to kind of pause my emotions and my hope, quote unquote, because very rarely does someone come up here and like make the difference that everyone expects them to make. And I know we joked around in the war room, right? Like every time it was going to be in a bat, we start speculating. We kept clawing back in the game. It's like, oh, is he going to hit a walk off? Is he going to hit a home run? Is he going to end the game? And he inevitably didn't. You know, he had some miscues in the field. obviously one of them being, you know, the one miscue was extremely costly. We ended up scoring a run that proved costly during the game, especially at that moment. But I don't know. The best way I could sum it up is I wasn't moved, to be honest with you. You know, like I had excitement, but I just wasn't necessarily moved by Roman Anthony. He didn't look uncomfortable at the plate. Him as well as like half of the lineup. I don't know how many times we're going to watch like a curveball go right down the middle, 80 miles an hour. That's a different conversation. But the best way I could sum it up, Nick, is I just necessarily wasn't moved.
That's fair. I understand having some sort of hesitance, especially because Christian Campbell came up and looked so unbelievable at the start of the season. No doubt Roman Anthony is going to have a bad month. It's just going to happen. Tonight, though, I thought it was a pretty good sign. Like you said, Jason, I like the sound of the ball off of his bat. He hits the ball very hard. Really, if you look at all of his sort of metrics for the minor leagues, just unbelievable exit velocity, barrel percentage, really elite when it comes to working walks and being patient. And we saw that tonight. He had a good demeanor. He definitely carries himself well. And despite being 21, he looks so much more mature than some of the other kids that come up. You know, I compare him to another 21-year-old in the sport, Jackson Holiday, who looks like a cherub, you know? So Anthony kind of comes in with this swagger and this big frame, and he looked good up there. He didn't try to do too much. And that's always what I'm worried for with a rookie is, are they going to try to swing for the fences every single time? And he came up with a couple opportunities to maybe do that where no one in that crowd wanted more for an Anthony walk-off than Roman Anthony did. But he was patient, and he took his pitches. And at one at-bat, actually, I think it was his last one, he watched six sliders go without swinging once, and he ended up walking. And that shows a lot of discipline. I don't think you get too many rookies who do that, especially not in their first game. Now, aside from Anthony, and including Anthony, as you said, Chris, the defensive miscue in right field, that was terrible. That was just an atrocious error. It is very funny that this kid comes up and he actually gets an error before he gets just about anything else, before he gets an RBI or a hit or anything. And really, with that silly mistake he made, it really fits in with this team. You had two errors from both sides tonight. Very sloppy defense, both for the Red Sox and the Rays. And just more of the same, just this lack of fundamentals, this lack of readiness. What do you guys think of that? What do you guys think of, who was it? Who else aired tonight? Who was it on? Because there were a couple bad plays that didn't end up getting scored as errors, I thought. Just very uncomfortable looking exchanges. Anything stick out to you?
Well, I thought one of the more interesting plays was the infield fly where Myra kind of tries to fly in and grab it. He drops it. The runners try to go, and Trevor Story thought it was like a force-out play. So he just tags a bag, throws to Campbell. Luckily, Campbell tags his guy. And that one is a tricky one because that play almost like never happens. Like, runners don't try to advance on infield flies. They just don't. It's like, if you do, you're an idiot. So it was kind of a weird one there. But yeah, it was a lot more just not being sharp. Like, even that Zach Kelly play where it was sort of that in-between hop, him and Romy have to communicate, like, Kelly's got to go right to the bag, and Romy's got to get to that ball. Like, instead it was Zach Kelly tried to pick it up. His lumbering ass couldn't get to it. So then he's like, okay, I guess I'll go to the bag now. Romy tries to flip it with his glove. He can't. Like, it's just not sharp. There's always plays like that where it's not necessarily an error, and it may not be called an error. I don't know if that one was, but it's a kind of play where it's got to be made. And if you make it, it helps you potentially win the game. And because you didn't make it, you lost. Like, that was a big reason why. We've talked about Christian Campbell, that he's had a lot of plays like that where they're not necessarily errors, but if he comes up with it and he's able to make a better play, or, you know, dishes on a double play a little bit better, then, you know, it doesn't cost them later on. So, and that's part of having, you know, a really young roster, which they do. Their veterans, you know, aren't very good defensively, and their kids are rookies, and rookies are going to make mistakes. So I will say I'm glad that Anthony had his, I hate to label it this, but his Jaron Duran moment in the first game. Like, get it out of the way. It sucks. I felt bad for the kid. Like, his whole face was beet red when they were panning to him afterwards. But it was encouraging to see him in the dugout on the top rail the next half inning. And Rob Refsnyder is one of the first guys to go over to him and like start talking to him. The Nesson cameras cut away too fast, but that's where having a guy like Ref Snyder is good, because he probably went over there. It's like, hey, you know, shake it off. It's okay. You know, you got it out of the way. Let's turn the page. Let's move on. That kind of thing. So I'm glad he got the big blunder out of the way in his first game, but hopefully there's not too many more.
Yeah, I think the lack of communication, right, with some of the players in the field, it's becoming extremely frustrating. You know, to your point, Jason, like, someone's got to know in that moment between Kelly and Romy, like, who's going after the ball, who's going to the base. Like, those are things that should be talked about. I get that, like, there's sometimes these fluky, weird plays, like the one you said with Story, where I know we joked around in the row room, but like, we're expecting so much from Story to not get hurt, to actually hit the ball, and then to know all the rules in baseball. But like, that play happens, you know, once out of what, every 1,000 plays, if that. So the fact that he didn't know, I didn't get that frustrated with that. And then Campbell, yeah, he made the tag, although I think it was a little bit by accident, to be honest with you, because he missed the bag. But the miscues and miscommunication in the field, I think, is what's the most frustrating at this point. But the pitching, too. Bernardino was just an absolute wreck. I think he actually did have an error. I don't know if they scored an error, like when he tried to pick off at second and he allowed the guy to go to third unnecessarily. He had absolutely no control. I mean, our bullpen is just like absolutely overworked, overtaxed at this point. You know, we wrote an article about it today. You can't win every game scoring, you know, 8+ runs. It's not sustainable. It's not possible. And today was a prime example. We got away with it in the Bronx. And the pitching, let's just face it, like, even though the Yankees are a better team overall, the pitching's not as good as the Rays. And when you're not able to score 8+ runs consistently, and in these crucial spots, and you face better pitching, you're going to lose more than you're going to win. That's probably the most frustrating part for me at this point, Nick, is the pitching. I don't know what the answer is at this point, because, you know, like, Bayo had a quality start for Bayo today, but it wasn't the greatest. Like, I think we're all hyping it up because of what we've just become accustomed to with Bayo at this point. But one day it's starting pitching, and then it's always the bullpen. And when they're overtaxed, it's always going to be the bullpen. And I don't know what's going to happen as this continues for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And you're right. It was Bernardino on the pickoff who had the second error for the Sox. I know Jaron Duran did have a really bad play out in left field, and I'm going to give Bayo some credit for today, because I feel like if he had a more solid defense behind him, he was pitching very efficiently. You know, he was at, what, I think 88 pitches by the end of it. It was somewhere around that. Let me see here. 6.1 innings pitched, 7 hits, 1 walk, 4 Ks, ultimately gave up 4 runs, only 3 earned. He gave us a chance. You know, it's funny, because I was speaking with a friend of mine the other day, and I said it's getting ridiculous how, now that the Red Sox offense is clicking, you know, finally, if we just had our starters go reliably 5 innings pitched, 3 runs, which isn't even a good start, how many games we would be in a position to win just doing that. And, you know, Bayo did his job. Unfortunately, Bernardino came out, and you sort of see the results of overtaxing an arm. This guy has been pitching so much, and it's a shame, because he went back to the dugout and the camera panned to him and it followed him, and he was throwing a tantrum. He was so angry at himself. And I love that, because I love to see a fire, you know, inside someone. I love to see an attitude. I love to see a guy who cares. But at the same time, dude, give yourself a break. You know what I mean? We're asking him to go out there so many nights and play in so many games. It's just ridiculous. And tonight, he melts down. I thought that leaving Guerrero out there for as long as Cora did was a big mistake. But that's just another sign of a taxed pen, I suppose. Chapman came out. That's his third game in a row, right?
Yep.
Really, really good performance. I guess last night was pretty brief, but a really good performance from him. And I'm just sitting myself, and there were a couple little decisions when it came to the pinch hitting, when it came to the overall player management that had me going crazy, because obviously, you know, you have the big one, the elephant in the room, which is, why did David Hamilton pinch hit for Connor Wong instead of Narvaez? Narvaez had to come into the game anyway. So why not give a better hitter that at bat and keep Hamilton, who's like a defensive substitute, a pinch runner, a sure thing pinch runner too. It's the one thing that you really can't take away from him. Why that logic really just, I couldn't understand the approach. I thought that Cora did a very good job to pinch hit Gonzalez for Meyer. That was a very good feel. Romy ended up having a great game. He's having a very good season so far. But then towards the end, why save Ref Snyder to pinch hit for Anthony instead of trying to end it in that 10th inning? That's what I was trying to figure out is, you know, you have a lefty up. You have two men on, two outs, and you're going to count on Trevor Story here. And full on knowing that Zach Kelly is your next pitcher. I just don't understand that. And, you know, Roman Anthony, he's a reverse splits guy. He's the rookie. We have Rafaela who can play all around. But for me, I would rather just try to end the game right here. Let's try to win it.
Yeah, Story's the one that you should be pinch hitting for. I mean, I certainly understand pinch hitting for Connor Wong too, because that guy, he's worse than Trevor Story at this point at the plate, which is saying something. But you're right. Like, why not pinch hit Ref Snyder for, or Story for Ref Snyder there? Like, because you have a good chance to win it there. And okay, like, I guess Cora's probably thinking, well, if we tie it up or if we don't succeed there, then I've got to bring Rafaela in to play the infield, and he's not as good in the infield. And, you know, I think Cora's maybe thinking ahead to like the defensive machinations he's going to have to go through. But at that point, like, Rafael can play the infield. He's not as good there, but he'll be fine. I just think that getting Trevor Story up there every single time with runners in scoring position, you know how the at-bat's going to go. He's going to look at fastballs down the middle, and then he's going to swing at a slider that's 70 feet out of the zone. And that's exactly what he did. I mean, that was a non-competitive throwaway pitch, and Trevor Story hacked at it and just struck out swinging. I mean, it's the same result every time, and it's Cora just not wanting to burn his guy because Trevor Story is his guy. He doesn't want to show him up, doesn't want to embarrass him. He doesn't care about pinch hitting the kids because they're kids, so who cares? You know, in Cora's mind, they don't have feelings, so who cares? But Trevor Story, nope, can't pitch him. No, he's my guy. He's my guy, and, you know, we got to let him, you know, hit his way through this slump. It's so stupid. Like, I agree with you. That was one where I go, now you're putting Ref Snyder in for you're going to pinch hit the number one prospect in baseball for Rob Ref Snyder when you could have done it two innings ago. Like, that's just, yeah, that makes no sense to me.
Yeah, I would agree with you guys. I think Cora navigating the pitching staff as best as he probably could, considering how taxed it was. But the, you know, pinch hitting decisions, even, well, I'll get into another point, but the pinch hitting itself made absolutely no sense throughout the whole game. He's just becoming extremely rigid at this point with his pinch hitting, right? And it's very predictable. Like, if I'm the other manager, I already know who he's going to be pinch hitting, when he's going to be pinch hitting, who's getting replaced, and when, depending on who it is during the game. It's almost laughable at this point. And to your point, Jason, the fact that, like, Trevor Story never gets pinch hit for, and, like, that's his quote-unquote guy, is absolutely insane to me, because now we have all the kids up. Like, they're all here. And if Cora, I mean, he signed an extension, so his intention is to be here for a while. And the last time I checked, their contracts, or at least their anticipated contracts, should be outlast Trevor Story. So at some point, he's got to start pouring into these kids. Let's see what they have. Let them make the mistakes. Let them have to make adjustments. Let them fail so they can learn to not fail. And to just absolutely throw that all away at the expense of, like, making Trevor Story, who on a good day is a 250 hitter, is laughable at this point. It's just an absolute joke. And I think about even in extra innings, like when he walked, forgot who it was. Was it Aranda in extras? He walked him.
I think so. Let me see.
With Zach Kelly. I mean, that's,
yeah, that's right. That was the intentional walk.
Yeah. I mean, it was just stupid at that point. I get the guy's been swinging the bat well, but knowing Zach Kelly, I mean, no one should know him better than Alex Cora at this point, and Andrew Bailey, and those two, like, stand next to each other all damn game. They should know that is the last thing you want to do is walk with Zach Kelly on the freaking mound. Because, yeah, he either throws it right down the middle or it's about 5 feet off the plate. And don't even get me started on the calls. You know, like Caminero got a walk on a couple of questionable calls. They were balls, right? And he got the walk. And then Romy Gonzalez, like, that ump couldn't wait to go home with that pitch. But you know what the truth is? We deserve to lose. Because, again, we can't be in these positions where we have to score 8 freaking runs every night to win. And it's just, it's getting very frustrating at this point. Because what do we hang our hat on? We're not letting the kids truly develop, right? So it's like, it's almost a waste for them to be here. They have this immense, unjustifiable pressure on them to fix the season, which they're not even being given the full opportunity to do. And we just keep making the same mistakes in the field, the same pinch hitting decisions. And we're taxing our bullpen, which is an Achilles heel that has a knife in it. So I don't know what we're doing. I don't know what the freaking plan is long term, but we got to, like, we have to come up with something at this point as an organization.
Yeah, this goes deeper than talent for me. You know, first off, Zach Kelly, I couldn't get over the fact that on that walk, when he walked in that run, like you said, there were that those two balls, and he struts off the mound like a peacock. And those were not missed calls. Those were obvious, clear-cut balls. That was so funny to me. And I'm like, dude, what are you doing? You get one of those. I'll give you one of those. And then he did it again. That blew my mind. But right now, you know, you look at Trevor Story. He's been hitting well for the past week. I don't necessarily buy into it. A lot of it are like, he keeps hitting singles up the middle, which are nice base hits to get when you get them. But if that's all you're getting, it becomes a little more lackluster and a little easier to shift into. Roman actually hit a sort of would-be single up the middle. It actually had an expected batting average of .410. But because they shifted over, it was just, you know, a ground out and probably would have been a double play ball if there was a runner on first. It's nice to see, like I said, the offense sort of producing. Campbell has been having a very sneaky resurgence in the last 15 games, really. A nice .340 on base. Myers looking good in his debut. This new stretch, this new era of Red Sox baseball, I think it's starting pretty good for the guys who are going to be here long term. You know, guys like Dobbins and guys like, you know, who like you said, are going to sort of outlast Trevor Story in the grand scheme of things, thank God. But one player I would like to really sort of humble myself to, because I was a hater of this guy and I still don't know what to think. Are you guys buying into Abraham Toro? What do we think of this dude? Because he has just been hitting nonstop.
So in the war room, I joked around, and I'm not even kidding. This is the point that's also part of the problem with the Red Sox right now. I'm more moved with Abraham Toro and Romy Gonzalez at bats than the kids. Because at least they're getting the opportunities and they're getting the situational opportunities to hit. And for the most part, they're succeeding. I mean, they're both batting over .300. Romy Gonzalez has been one of our more clutch hitters since he's come up at this point. It's a good thing, but it's also a bad thing. Like, when that's what's exciting me as a fan, when we have three of the top 10 prospects in baseball playing at the same time on your favorite baseball team, and I'm sitting here going, man, I can't wait for Romy Gonzalez to come up to the plate. That's a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Toro. I liked him when he was with Seattle. I thought he was a good sort of switch power bat. I don't think he's as good against lefties. I'd rather he sit against lefties. I don't know what your other option is there, but he is a professional hitter, and, you know, he's a little bit better at first base and third, but he's also pulled out some incredible plays at third base just randomly. So he's a good, you know, serviceable player to have, at least for now. I would like an upgrade at the deadline if they do somehow climb back into it and actually give a damn and, you know, actually try and go for the playoffs. If they don't, then it'll probably be Abraham Toro for the rest of the year. Romy, I like. The only issue is I kind of get a little bit bummed out that he keeps hitting. And I know that sounds weird, but the problem with that is because he keeps hitting, Marcelo Meyer has no shot in hell of ever facing a left-handed pitcher again. Because as soon as a lefty is on the mound in a clutch situation, Cora's going to go to Romy. We all know it now. It's just, it's like, I think, Chris, you're the one who said, like, the opposing managers know what Cora's going to do before he even does it. Like, opposing managers know, yeah, he's going to pull out Romy. Okay, yeah. So, yeah, Romy's nice. He's a nice player to have, and I'm glad that he does hit when he comes off the bench. But it's also like, ugh, I'd rather, like, I don't know, rather he go, like, 0 for 4 against a lefty. Just one game. So, like, Cora goes, maybe Marcelo could hit lefties. Maybe I should give that a shot. It won't happen, but, you know, it's just, it's one of those things where, yeah, they're nice veteran players to have, but I still want to see more of Meyer, Anthony, Campbell. Like, at that, at yeah. this point, that's where I'm at. If you're going to toss away the playoffs, if this is a development year again, as every Red Sox beat writer has been trying to shove down our throats the last couple weeks, fine. Then I don't want to see Romy and Abraham Toro more than I see Meyer and Anthony and Campbell. So, yeah, they're nice players to have, but that is the frustrating part about it, is they will take at-bats away from the top three.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, the thing with Toro, I'm just sort of waiting for that chase rate to catch up with him, because that's something that scares me. When you're chasing balls outside of the zone and absolutely refusing to walk, and you are constantly sort of building this house of cards where you need to keep hitting. If you have a slump, wow, do you slump hard. Usually that's how those types of players are, you know. Funnily enough, Toro, just generally, in the terms of how he plays defense, in the terms of how he runs, and in the terms of even how he sort of looks, he kind of has like an Eduardo Nunez vibe to me. And Nunez, though, is another one where back in 2017, he came in, he was amazing, he was hitting, and then he pretty much had the same approach where in 2018, he was... I mean, he had some playoff miracles. He had some good games. But overall, in the span of the season, it just didn't work for him as much. It's hard to repeat those successes sometimes. It's hard to make that sustainable. As it stands, I mean, I'm of two minds about the offense right now. Because on one hand, I'm thinking, well, maybe if Bregman's injury isn't so bad and he comes back, you know, in a month, you know, maybe a Romy Toro type of platoon at first base, maybe that's not the worst thing in the world. But I'm also looking at the stats tonight, and, you know, I've been harping on about it to the point that it's almost tiresome. What were we tonight? Let me see. I have it written down here. 4 for 23 with runners in scoring position. You just can't do that. It's funny to say that the offense should have done more. When you score 8 runs, usually you say, oh, that's all on pitching, that you lose that game, which is true. But it also does feel like this could have been a 16-run game. It really could have been. I'm not going to, you know, put any evil on the players, obviously. They did the best they could, and they really put up a hell of a fight. But I feel like if we are going to go deep into this season with hope, which at the end of this 15-game span, you know, the two series versus the Yankees, the series against the Rays, the Mariners, and the Giants. If we want to really say, okay, we have playoff aspirations, we need to not only really play excellent baseball here and wind up at 500 by the end of it, or a game within, I think it'll be, but we need pitching badly, because this is just ridiculous. You can't, as you guys have both said, and as everyone with a brain has said, you can't count on your offense to score 8 runs a night. It's not a sustainable model.
Well, Nick, before you go on with pitching, I think there is a point there with the offense, because this is something that's also been systemic this season, is we do have these these offensive outbursts. And even on a night like tonight, it's hard to blame them when you score as many runs as they do, because you should win that game 9 out of 10 times, 10 out of 10 times, let's be honest. But this has been an issue this season where even when we're clawing back, or we get into this, we tie the game, give up the lead, tie the game, we have a lot of opportunities with runners in scoring position, whether it's in a ninth inning or in extra innings, to put a game away, and we don't. And we've lost a lot. I mean, we've lost the most one-run games in the league, but we've probably lost the most games with the opportunity to take, you know, to walk it off in the ninth or in extras, with runners in scoring position of any team in the MLB. And so there is this mix and balance of, yeah, you can't expect them to hit or to score 8 runs, but like you do kind of expect when you get that many opportunities to drive in a run in a clutch situation, because, you know, you're not going to get a Yankees game where, you know, you jump on a team and you have a 2-3-4-run cushion you just keep building on, you're going to have to claw back. You're going to have to tie a game. You're going to have to walk it off in the bottom of the ninth in extra innings. And that has not happened too frequently.
And a lot of it's the approach. This kind of reared its head in the Angels series, and I was complaining about it then. But, you know, the Angels, when they had runners in scoring position, they would do things like, oh, I don't know, bunt. Or they would just hit the ball the other side to move the runner over. Or they would do small things like that that help you manufacture offense when your offense is struggling. The Red Sox don't do that. Their approach for pretty much every hitter in this lineup is go up there and swing out your ass. Even if you got runners on second and third with nobody out, instead of just, oh, hit a ground ball to the other side to drive in a run, or, you know, hit a grounder up the middle or something. Nope. It's go out there and launch. Just try to launch. That's what a lot of the players in this lineup do. Duran does it. Rafi does it. Sadan Rafaela definitely does it. He goes up there hacking all the time. The kids, we don't know yet, right? I don't know what Meyer's approach with runners in scoring position is, because we never see it, because he always gets pinch hit. Same with Roman Anthony. We don't know. Roman Anthony might have cracked 110-mile-an-hour single with runners in scoring position, but we'll never know because Ref Snyder has to pinch hit for him. We know what Trevor Story's going to do with runners in scoring position. He's going to strike out on 3-4 pitches. So it's just, that's where the approach combined with Cora not pinch hitting the right guys or not letting, you know, your top prospects get a crack at it is really where, that's where the offense struggles, because they could do little things like that to move runners over, manufacture offense that way, but they just don't. It's not their philosophy. Their philosophy is launch angle and just swing out your ass. And this is where it's gotten them. So yeah, you can score 8 runs in a game, but you could have had a lot more, as Nick pointed out. 4 for 23 runners in scoring position. You could have blown out the Rays tonight if you really wanted to, but you didn't. And that's because your approach sucks. So that's got to change too.
Yeah. And, you know, the Rays, they also had a good offensive night. 6 for 15 with runners in scoring position. That's how you do it at the end of the day. Working a walk with the bases loaded, saying, you know what, this guy's wild. If he doesn't want to hit the zone, I'm not going to chase. It really does scream like fragility to me. It really is like a house of cards where, you know what the word that comes to mind is, or the two words, I guess, the term glass cannon. Right? The idea that you're focused on this massive offense and the potential to hit these massive home runs, these huge doubles. But because of that, you're fragile. You go through these bad stretches, as we saw, unfortunately, during a good chunk of the beginning of the season. This is ultimately a lineup that is producing right now, but you have to be cautious because this is ultimately a weaker version of a lineup that was slumping badly and looked like it couldn't buy a hit during certain series. So it really does need to just tighten up across the board. You need better hitting, you need better fielding, and you need better pitching. Can we get all of that? Maybe. I think it's achievable. I'm not counting them out, but you need a lot to break your way. And Romy striking out looking on a ball that was, you know, it was solidly below the strike zone. That type of stuff will sink us. We're in a position right now where we can't weather those storms. We really need lucky breaks, and we're getting to a point where we can only even count on luck to save us for a certain matter of time, because if we get to the end of this stretch and we're 6 or 7 games below 500, I don't care how lucky you get, it's probably time to start thinking about selling off pieces.
Yeah, the truth of the matter is this team, specifically the pitching department, is not talented enough to harness any sort of momentum, because we've seen time and time again this season where, whether it's the Yankees series over the weekend, right, or the Braves a couple of weeks ago with the Devers walk-off, you know, the Cardinals series earlier in the year, we've had these moments where you're like, okay, we're starting to put it together. This could be the moment where everything turns. And the truth is, in baseball, you're only as good as your next pitcher, right? And our pitching department, outside of Crochet and Dobbins and Fitz in some moments throughout the season, has been 50-50 at best. I would take 50-50 in most cases, and we're not even getting that. The truth is, we have to fix our starting pitching going forward. The only way I realistically see it is through trade. But things are now very real, because now the hope or the idea of prospects and potential is real. Everything's a reality. They're all sitting in front of us. And our pipeline behind them isn't that great, where we're going to get these great starters that are going to make huge differences. So very quickly, I know they're kids, and I know we can't expect them to be superstars overnight. Kind of need one of them to start to look like they might be. Because the reality is if we're going to turn this thing around and we're going to like bring in a difference maker at some point, one of them is probably going to have to go. And the crazy part is, more than likely, it's going to be the one that kind of starts to show some sort of flashes, because if it's only one of the three, no one's going to want the other two. Not for someone that's going to come in here and be a difference maker to help turn this thing around long term.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm wondering if Willy or Abreu doesn't get banged up, when do we see Roman Anthony? I don't know, honestly. And Abreu has been struggling badly. Really, I saw that really, if you remove that opening series where he was a monster, he just hasn't been all that. It's possible that his injury will give way to a Roman Anthony renaissance. Maybe this will be a Tom Brady, Drew Bledsoe type of situation where, you know, a star is born due to unfortunate circumstances, and maybe Willie or Ken fetch us something. But I agree with you that, I mean, some of the names that I'm seeing thrown around, it's like people want us to trade with Seattle. Well, Seattle is in a playoff push. Why would they give us a pitcher? They wouldn't. Some people even say, you know, Castillo. Well, if you look at Castillo's numbers, the metrics, they aren't even good. You know, he's getting aided by a pretty good defense right now from the looks of it. Who has the pitching that would also be willing to give us the pitching? It's not going to be the Rays. People are talking about going out and getting Yandy Diaz. The Rays are playing great baseball. They've got the playoffs in their eyes. Same thing can be said with Toronto. Same thing can be said with a lot of teams. So unless you want to go out and you know, beg the Athletics for, you know, Severino, but even he, I think, has a 3-year contract, so I don't know why they'd break off for that. I don't really know what we do or who's available right now.
No, I mean, you're looking at going to a team like Miami and taking one of their numerous broken pitchers and saying, okay, well, you guys suck anyway, so, you know, let's make a deal. Like, you're looking at trading for a guy like Alcantara who looks like he's toast, looks like he's broken now, and that's what Miami does to all their pitchers. So, you know, it's tough. Like, what are you going to do, trade with the White Sox for Shane Smith? Oof, that's jazzy. Like, it's, yeah, that's what you're looking at, because you are one of the bottom barrel teams right now. Sorry to say it, but you are. You're in that tier in the American League where you're not the White Sox, but you're kind of there with, like you said, the Athletics, the Angels. Like, you're one of those crap bag teams that it's really hard for you to trade from a position of power, because everyone knows you need pitching and everyone knows that you've got a lot of prospects. So you're going to have to give them up, but Breslow doesn't want to do that. So, and yeah, like, you can't just go to, you know, San Diego and be like, okay, we want Dylan Cease. San Diego's going to be like, yeah, good for you. We want to win the division, so go away. Like, yeah, you're not in a good position here, because the teams that you'd be willing to trade, or that would be willing to trade with you, don't have much to offer, especially when it comes to pitching. So, you know, really for me, I think for the pitching to turn around, like, let's start with internally. Can Walker Buehler pull his head out of his ass and, you know, pitch like he did the second half of last season? That would help, instead of him getting lit up for 6 runs every, you know, in the first 2 innings. Can Lucas Giolito be at least a back end, like, give you 5-6 innings and not completely puke on his shoes? Can he at least do that? Like, that's what they need. Can Tanner Houck fix himself and whatever's going on with him? I don't know. That's the thing. You're banking on a lot of this happening, and it just might not. Walker Buehler might have been a bad investment. Lucas Giolito might have been a bad investment. Tanner Houck might be broken. I mean, that's the position you're in. So at least you got Crochet. That's, you know, that should be a win every 5 days. Brian Bello's going to have his Jekyll and Hyde kind of season where, you know, a start like tonight, I thought he was pretty good. You know, I agree with you guys, but next time out, he might get shelled in the first 2 innings. Hunter Dobbins, I like, but he's still really raw. So, and I think Cora still has trust issues with him going deep into games. So it's tough, man. Like, it, for their pitching to get fixed, it might just, I don't know if you can fix it in just one season. Might be another offseason or two.
Yeah, I think I'm not even looking at it for this season at this point. I'm at the point, I think this season, there's so many holes that have to be fixed. We realistically just don't have the tools and the prospects to fill all those holes, right? Beyond two of the three names you just mentioned, Jason, like Giolito's gone, Buehler will be gone. So we've got Crochet, you've got Bayo, you've got Dobbins, you've got Fitz.
Crawford coming back.
They'll all be coming back, but like, don't know what's going to happen with Fitz because he's always hurt. Dobbins, it's still so early to really make a call on that. Bayo, just, we know what Bayo is at this point. What Bayo is what he is. He's not the next coming of Pedro Martinez, I'll tell you that. I think about all these damn prospects, man. Bayo, Casas, now we got the three that are up here. If none of them hit, oh my God. It's so over for us because we put so much the last half decade in these kids. And so far to this point, none of them have panned out. And I'm not including the three that are up here now because it's still too early. But the ones that have preceded them have not even come close to panning out to even half of what they should have been. And, you know, I'm seeing people blow up our chat. And I know I've said this in the room. They're like, with Skeens. Well, that dream's gone, guys. Because now that the three are here, you're not getting Skeens. Unless one of these guys turns into Aaron Judge, no one is going to take – you'd have to trade all three of them to get Skeens. Because to be frank, none of them at this point are worth Skeens. When there was hope, when there was the potential and the prospect of potential, they're worth everything. But now that they're here on the major league roster, they're major league players. And if they suck, I know it's early, but in reality, to try and get a Skeens, they're not going to be worth it. So that's out.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. But I just want to interject quickly too, is like with a thing like Skeens, like that's the type of move that gets a guy almost like blacklisted from MLB front offices. I mean, when you have a guy like Skeens still so early in his career with so many years of control left, that would be Charrington just saying, I have no faith in my own ability to put together a playoff team in the next 5 years. It's just not going to happen, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is Ben Charrington, but
true.
You forgot that part. But no, but in all seriousness, I think I don't know what the move is long term at this point, but we have to come up with some sort of plan.
Yeah. For this year, I am ready to sort of divorce myself from expectations this year. I've been ready for a while. I figured I would give myself this stretch and see where we are. After that Giants series, we will see. Are we a playoff team? Did we do great against, you know, in 15 games against very good teams? Or did we bury ourselves? You know, and that's going to really decide on whether we're buyers or sellers for me. But I think that as tentative as I'm being with all of those expectations, the number one thing to keep in mind that I want the team, the front office, all the players, just make sure that in trying to chase this long shot of the playoffs this year, you're not throwing away the playoffs next year. Set yourselves up for success. And if that means throwing in the towel, throw in the towel. I don't want to see any Danny Jansen trades like last year. I don't want to see any BS, and I don't want to see any refusal to sell off pieces like we did with Eovaldi and Xander and JD. If we're sitting around 500 and the deadline comes along and we have guys coming back from the IL, I don't care. Just, I would much rather punt this season, play the kids, treat it as a development year, and go all in on 2026. Michael King, I think, is going to be a free agent. That might be an interesting guy to pursue. You know, flex your money a little bit and save your prospects if you can't get a good return on them. That's pretty much where I'm at right now. But we need arms. We might need bats. We need some guys who can field. Ultimately, I think, unfortunately, what we're counting on is for every single player on the roster to be the best version of themselves they can possibly be sort of like 2013 was, right? The 2013 Red Sox were a bunch of guys who just had career years. I don't think we're going to get that necessarily, but you never know. So for right now, I'll just keep holding my breath and enjoying the ride of watching Roman Anthony and Christian Campbell and Marcella Meyer and thinking, hey, man, maybe we have something really good brewing here. You know, that's where I'm going to focus right now. You guys have anything to add, or would you like to look at probable pitchers?
Yeah, let's do it.
One last thing. I do think that there's something to be said about the kids. All that's now riding on Cora.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, what happens with them, if they don't develop, if they don't start to, you know, show signs, he's going to own that 100%, and that's something to watch very closely. And then I think on the pitching side of things, that's on Breslow. Like, if he doesn't start coming up with a long-term plan, because he's supposed to be this pitching guru, that's going to be on him. So it's interesting to see how those two different parts of the team, really, like, the ownership falls on them squarely individually.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I was happy to see Cora get tossed. It was kind of an obvious ejection to take. You know, it's right at the end of a game, but it's good to see that he's not, like, checked out or anything. So looks like tomorrow we have a 7:10 p.m. game. It's going to be Ryan Pepiot versus Lucas Giolito. The day after that, we have another 7:10 p.m. game. Zach Little versus Walker Buehler. Do you guys have any predictions for that? I mean, obviously, just looking at the ERAs, Pepiot and Little absolutely blow ours out of the water. They've got combined about an ERA of 3.4. Giolito and Buehler would be about 5.8. But I don't know. I mean, I feel like this series is winnable, but like I said, you need to be the best versions of yourselves. We need Walker Buehler and Lucas Giolito to psych themselves up and say, we're not going to let what's been happening continue. I think it's winnable. I don't know. I'm concerned that best case scenario, we only win one of those.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. Like, I want to see Giolito come out with a little bit of pride tomorrow night. Like, dude, you got your ass kicked last time out, and it was embarrassing, and he was embarrassed by it. He was, you know, he was really angry about it. So, okay, come out with some anger and, you know, pitch your ass off, because this Ryan Pepiot is legit. He's the guy they got from the Dodgers for Tyler Glass now. Like, he's a beast. So he is their ace now, especially with McClanahan having all of his injuries. Like, he's going to be tough. And Zach Littell, I think, I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but it feels like he always pitches really well against the Red Sox. It's kind of like a revenge thing for him, because we brought him in as like a reliever for, I don't know, a month and a half or something, then DFA'd him, and Tampa picked him up, turned him into a starter, and now he's going gangbusters over there. So Littell always pitches us tough. You know, but again, like, that's where, same thing applies to Walker Buehler the next day. Like, dude, pitch with some pride here. Like, you know, you signed it was a 1-year deal, but it was a pretty hefty contract. Like, go out there and pitch like you earn it, you know, pitch like you deserve it, because you haven't yet. And the whole reason you came here is that you wanted to win. Well, part of the reason we're not winning is because of you, because every 5 days you go out there and you get your ass kicked. So I'm looking for Giolito and Buehler to, like, pitch with a little bit of pride here. Like, actually give your team a chance to win. Don't put them down by 5 runs in the first 2 innings. Like, give the offense a chance to do its thing and give the team a chance to win. I'll be happy if they split, but I don't have a good feeling about it.
Yeah, I have a solution that would help us avoid the inevitable sweep that looks like that's coming at this point. So I think for Giolito, we just need to dress up Fenway as a completely different ballpark. Just do what you got to do. Put some cardboard up. Make it look nice and pretty, because his ERA at almost being 11 at Fenway is an issue. And I don't foresee this all of a sudden flipping a switch now at this point. So unless we do that, I don't feel very good, especially against Pepiot. So we'll just get that out of the way. I think for Walker Buehler, it could be a little bit more creative. Let's get like a couple like pumpkins around, maybe a little bit of cider, some pumpkin spice Sam Adams. Tell him it's October, and he'll probably pitch a gem. But if not, to this point, I have very little faith that either one is going to do anything. I would love for them to come out here and have the pride that Jason was talking about, because both of them need to show it at some point, because they're getting paid a lot of money, not relative to what baseball players make in this day and age, but compared to anyone else that's throwing a freaking baseball at the end of the day, they get paid a lot of money to pitch at Fenway Park. And we're supposed to be a team that has a lot of pride, historical ball club, like come out here and show it, because it's getting ridiculous at this point.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We need these guys to go out there and really just buy into the team. That's what it comes down to. We need guys who care. Fortunately, I mean, from what I've seen of both of them, just in general demeanor-wise, seems like they do care. It's definitely not like a beer and chicken situation. They want to go out there and pitch gems for us. They want to help this team reach the playoffs and eventually the World Series. I would love to see that journey start with them tomorrow. This team, like I said a few games ago, has a great chance to shut a lot of people up and shove my words down my throat, and I'll be happy to eat them if they can do that. But only time will tell. We'll be back on tomorrow. We have been the Bastards of Boston. Thank you so much for sticking with us and with the team in general. Remember to go to bastardsofbostonbaseball.com. Great written articles. If you missed any part of Roman Anthony's debut, I did do a write-up on there. And the contributor list is just growing and growing. It's really awesome to see what that site's growing into. So please go check it out if you want some reading on Red Sox baseball and a few things around the sport as well. But yeah, until next time, I've been Nick the Voice. We've been the Bastards. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.